This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go.
This episode is brought to you by Tushy, Modern Fertility, and KiwiCo. Thank you for making our show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Love is love.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just because we stay.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Happy Monday.
Guys, Jamie's life is so crazy, and then she got herself a dog.
We're just gluttons for punishment. No, listen.
You really are a little bit.
There was a dog that needed a home, and we have a home, and so we said sure. And our kids
did.
Yes, and our kids have been dying for a dog, and it was just
that video you put up of like surprising was so awesome. It was really awesome.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the look on my daughter's face, like, oh my God, she's very excited. She has a dog again. Seems like she's going to be a really good addition to our family. And listen, Robin, listen, the dog needed a home. She needed a home. Uh-huh. So we wanted to give her that home. She's really sweet. She's pooping around, but I think she's just, you know, she's been in a couple homes in the past week.
Welcome to the chaos of Jamie's life.
It just never ends. And once we get kind of a hold on things, something new gets added to the mix. I'm not going to say we add something to the mix because it's not always us who's adding it. That's what I'm going to say. This time it was us.
The mix that keeps getting added to my life is we just keep having accidents and things like that.
What happened? So tell me what happened.
This weekend, Henry and I, we took him to get his first shot because they opened it up to 5 to 11-year-olds. And on the way home, we stopped off to get McDonald's. That was his treat because he wanted a treat for it. And I was like, sure thing. Mm-hmm. Get a little McFlurry action. Mm-hmm. McDonald's reach out to us for sponsorship. We're open. And we're driving down the service road in Brooklyn. And I see two guys in front of us, like right in front of the car. And I thought, I just had like a fleeting thought of like, that's weird. And we passed them. And I look in my rearview mirror and they started shooting.
at each other?
I think at the brownstones.
Oh my God.
At the building. Like it was like they were, when I saw them in front of the car, it was like they were
like getting ready,
having like a little, yeah, like a little powwow about what they were getting ready to do. And just something looked weird. And then I said, oh my God, those are shots. And I was just like, and I was so, I didn't even know what to do. And then I saw people diving, which Ooh. Really freaked me out. Oh, and I just kept saying, holy shit, holy shit. And then I was like, okay, well, pull it together. Your kid's in the car.
What did he do?
He was just kind of like asking questions. Like I don't think he even processed it right away. And then I called 911. And then the whole rest of the day, he was like a little freaked out. And he made me walk him to school today because he was nervous. And we had like a lot of talks about just how lucky we are and how those people that live in that neighborhood, like that's something they have to deal with regularly, you know, and how fortunate we are. And we had a lot of talks about, like, I think what was so heartbreaking for me outside of the fact that my kid just saw this and like another level of safety has been removed. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like as you get older, mm-hmm. like the illusion of safety kind of peels away.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
for me, what was so upsetting was those two young men. Like yeah. I'm gonna start crying because it was so like it's just like that's their future. Like
how old were they? Like
probably 20-ish? Like either 20s? Late teens or early 20s, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. But you're just like they're gonna go to jail, you know. And I don't. It was just such a heartbreaking thing.
Jail.
That was our weekend.
Die. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like because there'll be some retaliation to that. You know. It just was really. It was one of those things. Like, I've been here 30 years. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
You read about it.
Yeah.
But just if we had come up a minute or two later, like would, and you know what I mean? And pulled up as it was happening, just like the whole thing, just
scary.
Yeah.
We had a shooting outside our apartment in my old relationship a long time ago, but I was single. I didn't have kids then. Totally different.
Well, that's the thing. It's like now I was thinking about how different it was because I had to then try to put this into context for my kid. And I was like, how much do we process? How much do I let him see how scared I am? And like, not a lot, I think. Maybe a little, but not a lot. Because I don't want to act like, oh, you shouldn't be scared. But then it's like, so today I was saying to him, like, how do you feel? And I just said, it's a little better, right? Every day it gets a little better. You get a little further away from it. But it's like, you know, all of a sudden you're trying to help somebody little process. And I mean, and that to me was just like parenting. Like these things that happen, it's not just to you anymore.
Yeah, no, totally. That's heavy. Maybe he needs
really
to, maybe he needs to get him a therapist to talk it out.
Oh, good Lord. You're saying I'm not good enough? I'm just
kidding.
I'm definitely not.
I think you're right up to the task, but it might be good. Who knows? You know, I don't know.
I said to him, do you maybe want to like talk to somebody like the school counselor or something mm-hmm. like that? And he said, no, I think I just want to put this behind me. I was like, okay, I'll be emailing the school and the teacher today, just FYI.
Yeah, just in case. Maybe reach out to him.
That and a head cold was my weekend. Oh, so it was less exciting than you with a cute little dog with a bow tie on it.
I mean, it keeps pooping everywhere. I don't know. It doesn't really compare. It's not the same.
Let's make a really awkward turn into if you want to help us make content for LGBTQ families.
You see, we're just like all the other families. You guys, we're just like everybody else.
Well, if you want to do that, if you want more behind the scenes, you can join our Patreon community and you can do just that. And you're going to be doing a good thing because let's be honest, you're literally going to be helping us make this podcast and you're going to get bonus content. And at the gestational carrier level, you get videos and interviews of most of the episodes, and they're dropped a day earlier.
Yeah, so come join us on Patreon, and let's talk about our episode, because we just really went on a tangent, mm-hmm. and we said we were going to button it up and be fast today. Okay, so let's talk about Carolyn and Laurel. I love these ladies.
They were great. I mean, amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What's their story, Robin? What's their makeup?
So they, one kid via IVF, mm-hmm. one kid via adoption. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The adoption was a bumpy road, happened in Canada. And I had no idea how difficult it is to adopt in Canada.
I didn't either.
Mm-mm. And Carolyn is an author. She writes lesbian fiction, which I love.
Oh my
Carolyn
God.
Elizabeth.
I'm going to get her new book. I can't wait. Yeah, we're all going to get our new book, actually.
Oh, yeah, we are. We're going to talk about that later. Yeah, we're going to talk about that later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Helen.
Enough of us.
Roll it.
Roll the tape, Helen.
Hi, Carolyn and Lowell. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
We're so excited to have you guys here. I mean, Carolyn, we met at a book thingy.
A book thingy. Mm-hmm. And that is the technical name of it. Yes. The book thingy. What was the name of the book thingy we did? We did a reading.
We were doing a reading for finalists for the GCLS Awards. You were finalists in a nonfiction, and I was a finalist in something else.
But yeah, we didn't,
did you win?
We didn't win.
I won one, yes. I did win.
Congratulations.
You did win.
Yay. Thank you. Yes,
I did. Yeah, we didn't win. We didn't win.
Nope.
No, that's okay.
That's all right. It's just nice to be nominated.
I still bought your book.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. That's all that matters. And we're going to go buy all of yours now. Okay.
Wait, but you said
she's got a lot now.
I can believe it.
She's got like a whole shelf. Mm. I write sort of forensic, autopsy-inclined romantic thrillers.
Ooh,
I've been branching out a little bit lately, though. So the book that I won for, though, was for Best Paranormal.
Ooh.
Spooky.
And the romance is all gay? Mm-hmm.
The romance is all gay.
I mean, like, that's...
all gay all the time.
That's my biggest problem with those books is it's always a guy and a girl. Nobody wants that. Who wants that?
No. Ooh. And the Other Side of Forest Lands Lake is the best one. It's the best Carolyn book.
Which one?
Far, so.
The Other Sides of...
The Other Forest Side of Lands. Forest Lands Lake is the title of the book that won for Best Paranormal this year.
Okay. Everybody get out there and buy it on Amazon or Goodreads or wherever you buy your books.
There you go.
Buy locally too. IndieBound. Go get that book.
All right. Okay. So listen, let's start with the elevator pitch about you and your family, how it was made. And I'm going to put up the terrifying little stopwatch, but you know, we don't hold you to it.
Cut you off.
Who cares that we even do
it?
You
have this.
We only do it because Rosie O'Donnell told us to do
it. I'm there for that. That makes sense to me.
Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
Okay. So we've been married about a year and a half. We decided we wanted to start a family. We started with at-home attempts at insemination. So we were getting like frozen sperm delivered to our front porch. Not something I thought was ever going to happen in my life when I was in my 20s, but here we are. That didn't work. Carolyn got some help with a brain tumor.
It's
not a tumor. It's not a tumor. I got to say that. She got pregnant the first time we tried in a lab with IUI. Then we had Henry. Then we started trying again. More at home than in an office. Then we moved countries. Then we signed up for adoption. Then we started the adoption process. Then the first baby did not stay. We tried IVF. Then we went back to the adoption process and adopted our second son.
Oh.
So we have done it all except for surrogacy. We haven't done surrogacy.
You haven't gone there yet, but you know there's time.
I think we're done. Like, we have these moments where we're like, oh, but a girl would be nice. And then we're like, are you insane?
No more kids.
I still
kids.
Do that, too.
No more
I kids. Still do that. And I have one of each. But
wait, our listeners couldn't see that the whole time Carolyn was pointing at the clock going,
you're over.
You're going over.
You're over time. You're
going over. Okay, many words. I'm over. A history professor. Yeah. I cannot self-edit, right? I only write long form.
Let's dig in. I have a Henry, too, which I love it already.
Yeah, there's so much.
Let's talk about who wanted to carry and why and how you started.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be pregnant. I'm a very experiential person. Like, if it is something I haven't tried before, I must experience it. And this manifests itself in all kinds of both healthy and unhealthy ways. And so pregnancy just completely fit that whole way of my being. I was like, we're sort of working in the medical field. I'm very science oriented. And I was like, I can grow a person. I can grow a person. I have got to know what that's like. In addition to wanting to be a parent and wanting to have a family, I was like, I have to know. I have to know what that's like. We at least have to try. So it was always going to be me. Yeah, I had had like a kind of epiphany sitting in a Quaker meeting house in my 20s where I felt like adoption was in my future and I had absolutely no interest in getting pregnant or having biological children. Like, there was stuff about population and climate change and like, what are you doing for the earth going on in my 20-year-old head. And so that was never a priority for me. But then I met Carolyn and I loved Carolyn and she was like, I can grow a person. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of amazing. So let's try that. Sure. By the way, she completely hated being pregnant in the end.
Don't we all?
Were miserable. Do not try and move history. I got the full Monty. I mean, I got every possible. I was really sick. I had like, what's that called? Carpal tunnel because I had so much edema. I just had all the every possible. And nobody tells you. For any listeners out there who haven't gotten pregnant yet, nobody tells you that elevation, changes in elevation drastically affect morning sickness.
Really? Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
We went to New Mexico when she was true. What, 6 months pregnant?
Yeah. Yeah.
She was miserable.
I cannot believe how sick I was. And I did not understand. And we lived basically at sea level. We were in Connecticut. And then New Mexico is, I don't know, 7,000 or something like that. And I was huffing lemons. I hate ginger now. Ginger lozenges. And we'd go out for this amazing Mexican food and I would be so hungry and I'd order like three different platters and it would show up. And then I'd be like, and like running out of the restaurant and stuff. It was a completely ruined vacation. And I came home and I still didn't realize that's what it was. But then I learned later that, I don't know the mechanics behind how it works.
I think it was your dad.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Her dad's a physician. I think it was your dad who was like, elevation's bad for pregnant people. We're like, thanks for telling us that. No,
I guess they didn't.
When we were planning the vacation. Thanks.
Yes. So,
pregnancy is hard.
Let's go back to, so you want to grow a baby and you're like, we're going to try it home and you're having sperm shipped to the house. Tell us about that.
Correct. Yeah. Not a lot of sperm banks do that, as it turns out, or maybe none anymore. I don't know. This was Henry's about to turn 10, but we found I almost said a mom and pop sperm bank. It's not, that is not the correct expression. When we first started talking about it, there was no reason to assume there was anything wrong with me. You know, we didn't want it to be overly medicalized, although we all know how the turkey baster thing works. But in our case, it's a cat catheter.
It was
right?
a cat catheter.
So it's a syringe with a cat catheter on the end and stuff like that. So
I love you, Squirt.
I think the cat part is kind of fitting. No, I don't know.
Yes, very lesbian.
They're dog people, but I was a cat lesbian.
Oh, I thought you were. I thought you were making a pun about.
Oh, well, a pussy joke.
Yes. No.
That's even better.
Took it dirty. Nice.
Yeah. So I don't remember how many times we tried that, but it was expensive. It wasn't working. It was frustrating. And at some point we just decided that I was like, maybe there is, like, why isn't it working? And there's a gajillion reasons why it couldn't have been working. So it was just time to go to, I also had really good insurance.
Oh.
So I didn't have infertility insurance. I had fertility insurance coverage. So I didn't need to prove that I was infertile before they covered it.
Yeah.
So I had hormones. So the first thing they do is blood work and I had elevated prolactin levels, which was sort of making my body think it might already be pregnant to a certain degree or whatever. So I was like, well, what causes this? Well, pituitary adenomas. So then I got sent for a brain CT.
Oh my God.
Oh, Jesus.
And they came back with possible micropituitary adenoma. And so I went on medication to lower it, I can't recall, which I was completely allergic to.
Oh God.
And broke out into this skin rash on both my forearms and just totally like covered up and lied. Cause they're like, oh, how's the medic, you know, because if I told them I was allergic to this medication, then they'd take me off it. We'd miss another cycle, you know, because we were coming up really fast on another opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I just was like, nope, everything's good.
Oh my God.
Everything's fine. Meanwhile, I had like, you know, hives all over my God. Arms.
And I kept saying, it's a brain tumor. And she kept saying, it's not a tumor. Yeah, and then I'd have to say it in the,
it's not a tumor. Yes, I got to say that a lot.
Oh my God. But so it's not a tumor.
No.
But there was something wonky going on.
I don't know. There was something weird. The medication worked. I lied about my allergic reaction. We went for that cycle and got pregnant.
Oh. And we got pregnant on Valentine's Day.
Some things can be romantic with us. Okay, Robin, let's talk about the gift that keeps on giving. Hello Tushy Bidet. It cleans your butt way better than wiping, cuts your toilet paper use down by 80%, saves trees and all the thousands of gallons of water used to convert them into toilet paper, and it comes with a book full of poop jokes. My butt is in love. Saying.
Mine too. I'm converted. I was a cynic. And then I tried it and now I will never go back. And my whole family is converted.
And mine too. I mean, even my 3-year-old loves it. I'm trying to get one for our second toilet now. I need it. Anne doesn't think it's necessary, but I really think we need as many toilet options as possible for a comfortable and clean poop. And I'm not kidding you.
Jamie, we got a code. Use it for the second
I'm going
one.
To.
Hello Tushy Bidet washes your bum with fresh water for a way better clean than toilet paper.
Simply spray and pat dry. It's that easy.
And it attaches to your existing toilet. There's no electrician or plumber needed. I did it myself.
I did it too. I'm proud of myself. Mm-hmm. And now you're all thinking, of us installing tushies and pooping, but that's okay.
Listen, all our lucky listeners, you too can poop comfortably. Give the gift of a clean bum to yourself or your loved ones this holiday season. You're going to get 10% off plus free shipping right now at hellotushy.com/ovaries.
That's hellotushy.com/ovaries for 10% off and free shipping. I mean, it works for everything, not just the back. Just saying.
What? Oh.
It cleans okay. Everything.
All right. Bye.
Yep. So the clinic worked out for us and 9 months later, whatever, out popped Henry. Oh, I make it sound like the delivery was easy. Oh no, that was just as ugly as the actual pregnancy. Everything went horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, no.
Not horribly wrong. Everybody was fine. I was fine and stuff. But what had happened was, and you would know, you were in New York. He was born in 2011 and there was this huge October snowstorm in New England. So you might recall, like in October. So all the leaves were still on the trees with this heavy, wet snow. And it just shut down the entire East Coast.
Pulled down power. Like half the power lines in Connecticut.
And we had my 40th week checkup.
Oh, God.
I found out that we had lost power. I was, about to deliver any day. Burst into tears. She took my blood pressure and she's like, your blood pressure's really high. I'm like, no shit. Because I'm going to go home to, no hot food, no hot shower. I could give birth any second. So they're like, well, you could be
preeclampsia.
Preeclampsia. Yes, yes. So we're gonna admit you. And I was like, that's fine. The hospital has power.
I hope
let's
so.
Go you do- got a generator,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. I was I'm like, coming. Let's go do that. Oh, I can take a shower. I have lights and hot food. So.
But what you didn't know was that then they were really gonna induce you. She said you were in labor, but you were kind of maybe in pre-labor.
No, I was
so
just freaking out.
Yes.
The labor story is gross and long and unpleasant. But the end result,
if you can avoid being induced, avoid being
the
induced.
The end result is we had a healthy, healthy, beautiful little baby.
I will say I was induced and I had my son in like 5 seconds. Like I just have that.
Robin's like a baby maker.
I pushed one time and the baby just popped out. Like I was like, okay.
That was so annoying. Carolyn was in labor for about 36 hours. But then I did get to cut the cord, which was amazing and cool. He was a really wild little baby. Like he had this kind of intense stare, like he could focus on you from the very beginning, which is weird for newborns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had this kind of like old man, old soul vibe going on. And we were just, how it is. You're just completely in love. And and sitting in this hospital, they let her stay a couple nights.
I did stay a few days.
Because we didn't have power yet. And you worked at the hospital and your doctors were being kind to us. And as we're getting ready to leave the hospital, we just looked at like, they're going to let us leave with this baby.
They're just going to let us take
right?
it.
Right? That moment. You're like, so I put it in here and I go?
Yeah.
And then we drove directly to a hotel.
We still didn't have power, so we couldn't go home.
But we were just giddy. Like we didn't even care. And thankfully, like I was teaching, but I didn't have to go to school because nobody had any power and everything was shut down. So I got like this weird, like snow day, 2 week time to bond with Carolyn and Henry and do the whole thing. And
I just carried him around like a little football. He was only 7 pounds. Yeah. I mean, he should not have been in the car or driving around or in a hotel, but we didn't. I mean, he couldn't be at home either. So whatever.
Obviously that you hated pregnancy, the labor stunk, but for the second one, did you try again before you shifted to adoption?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Were you just like, you I forget. Know that it was easy. So
no, you tried.
Again. We had 10 vials of sperm. We'd only
good
used
for
one.
You for buying it all up though. You know, some people buy like 3 vials and think it's going to work out and it doesn't. You have to buy it all. You have to buy as much as you can possibly afford.
We had 10. And so I think I tried 4 or 5 times. And we did the escalating, like, and that meant I had to do the thing where they blow the stuff through your fallopian tubes.
Yep, had that.
Stopping a gram. Mm-hmm. And then they did a surgery to try and address my general fucked up lady bits. Like, I had such bad endometriosis that there was no way anything was attaching to anywhere. So they had to go in and sort of like clean up my uterus to make it possible for me to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And then I did all the like hormones in the thigh, create the egg timing stuff, and experienced all the joys of that emotional hormonal roller coaster. and the kind of daily, you know, come to the office and we're going to do a vaginal ultrasound, you know, like at a certain point you're like, okay, I'm now in the X-Files and the aliens are invading me.
You do feel kind of like a science experiment after a while. You feel just kind of like a specimen, but also just like something on a conveyor belt that comes through because they see so many a day and they're just looking in uteruses and then they're sending you on your way. It's very impersonal. Yeah.
And, you know, the whole time I'm being told that I'm like both obese and a geriatric patient I'm not yet 40. So that's like
super fun,
you know, and I have all these kind of endometriosis issues that no one had bothered to diagnose yet in my life. Mm-hmm. So I was not feeling a lot of love for the medical end of this. And I did not get pregnant. So I tried four times. And then I think we used the other five vials on you.
But I want to know,
we thought you were more viable.
Laurel, what switched in you? Why did you decide to try with your body?
Because Henry
changed it for you.
Mm-hmm. And Carolyn was recovering from being pregnant.
Yeah.
But I think we had this sense of like, okay, we're the days when we can do this are waning. Like
I was already 37. I was aging. 37 when Henry joined. Mm-hmm. So we were like,
and I'm just a year younger. The clock was ticking. And so I think that was for most of 2012, I was trying to get pregnant and it didn't work out. And I think we just sort of felt like, let's stop throwing good money after bad. Like clearly this body is not going to do this. Mm-hmm. And Caroline had gotten pregnant so easily. Mm-hmm. The first time, once we got the whole pituitary adenoma thing addressed.
Just the brain tumor.
And also, we should mention that Henry's sperm donor, because this was through New England Cryogenic Lab or whatever, and they didn't offer, like, we didn't pay for all the bells and whistles where you can do, like, baby pictures. Like, there was no knowing what the donor looked like.
Oh, wow.
Aside from printing out a physical description and health, and of course, we based our things on that sort of thing. But when I called to order it, they said, oh, we do. Would you like to hear staff impressions? And I said, I don't know what that is. And they're like, well, you know, we can't show you photos and stuff like that. But the staff, when the donor comes in, will jot down notes. And I said, oh, yeah, lay it on me. Let's hear it. And we're just talking on the phone. And they said, donor, whatever, whatever, has chiseled model-like features and looks remarkably like Viggo Mortensen. And I was like, yes, please.
Yeah.
We'll take 10.
Here's my Amex card. Let's do this.
No, but actually, I mean, we actually learned a lot about each other in the process of choosing a donor. If you're at that stage of this process, like, get ready, buckle up, because you feel a little bit like a eugenicist and a little bit like you don't know what's important to your partner until you have these conversations. Like, it was important to Carolyn that this person came from an Episcopalian family. And I was like, oh, that doesn't matter to me at all. Right. But I would like this baby to look something like me, and Henry does look like me. So
he looks more like her than he looks like me.
Funny how that works.
Let's choose the blonde haired, blue eyed donor. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Feeling a little weird about that. Yes. But
well, he was genetically engineered as, you know, as much as possibly could, basically.
Yeah.
So once we had 10 of those vials, we were going to keep going.
Of course. Well, you picked Superman. We call the donor search the search for Superman because you get into your head, you get crazy. And it's interesting, nobody's ever brought that up, that you learn so much about your partner in this search, because that is a really important aspect of this search. You do, like, you discover things that your partner cares about that you would have never, ever known in a million years.
Wait till we get to the adoption paperwork.
Uh-oh. Well, first, I want to know, is there anything else you guys discovered about each other?
Wait, do you remember on the journey to this, too, we also discussed finding a known donor in Connecticut. And remember, we had found this guy who was a professor at Yale. And he was going to be our donor. And then we couldn't work it out legally. Like, there was no way for him to.
I know a lot of people do go down that route for cost effectiveness and fresh is better than frozen and stuff like that. And we tried to as well. However, there is no separation. If you do it that way, there's no separation between a donor and a father.
Yeah. It's definitely
so harder. If we had done that, neither one of us would, not us, but us and this other gentleman who was willing to do it. And he didn't know this either. Like, we could have sued him for parental rights. He could have sued us for custody. We didn't know each other. So we just were like, yeah, this isn't a safe thing.
You
didn't
want to take
do.
The risk.
No.
There was no way for him to give up parental rights before birth.
No, it has to happen after.
Yeah.
Right.
And you just never know. Anyway. It's not some people, it's not worth the risk. I mean, I would have been scared of that.
We've talked
too.
To people where things have gone sideways, and then we've talked to people where it's been totally fine. It's it's up to you if you want to take that risk. I'm not that person.
Yeah.
Jamie, what if I told you that you could get important fertility insight and you didn't have to go to a doctor or even leave home?
I'd say, tell me how.
Well, you are in luck because I'm about to. Modern Fertility is making this possible with easy at-home fertility hormone testing.
I love me some Modern Fertility. It's the easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple finger prick. You mail it in with a prepaid label and you're going to get your personalized results within 10 days.
I mean, and I know you're aware of this, Jamie, but maybe our listeners aren't, but traditional testing with your doctor, it can cost over $1,000. But Modern Fertility only costs $159 and you're going to get that same information.
Amazing.
And if you go to modernfertility.com/OCT, you're going to get $20 off that test.
It's amazing. Also, if you have an HSA or FSA, you can use those dollars on Modern Fertility. Boom.
Yep. You're going to get insight into how many eggs you have, hormone levels, any reproductive red flags. I mean, the results go in depth into what every hormone means. And you can also talk one-on-one with the fertility nurse to review your results and options for next steps.
Yes. So if you want kids today or maybe one day, you need information to make the decision that's best for you.
Yep. And right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT.
That means your test is going to cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office. Get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT.
modernfertility.com/OCT. So I just want to, what happened? So you tried 5 times, Carolyn, and it didn't work. So you went from being fertile myrtle to like, it's a dud in there?
Basically. Well, you know, I had Henry when I was, so I was now
39.
38 or 39 or whatever I was. And, you know, my eggs were on the decline. I don't think I was ever particularly fertile. I think we were very, very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate.
Interesting.
It's amazing that anybody gets pregnant.
I know. I was
right?
just like, going to say that. Yes.
Heterosexual unprotected sex results in pregnancy only, 20% of the time?
It really is so a miracle. Every time it happens, it really is a miracle.
Yeah.
So was it an easy decision to say, we're going to wrap this up and move to adoption?
No, it got interrupted by an international move.
Because we moved to Canada. We're going to wrap this up and move to Canada.
If we'd stayed in Connecticut, we might have continued attempting to get pregnant. We had actually also begun to explore adoption options in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We had some hard conversations about what that looked like. I remember a conversation in our basement family room where you like got really mad about international adoption and the fact that basically this is the moment when lots of countries were closing their borders to international adoption. Yep. And Carolyn's like, so they'd rather let baby girls die on hillsides.
You'd rather have a horrible orphanage.
Because I had always been open to adoption and excited about adoption, it had been part of the agreement that Carolyn would try to get pregnant and then everything would still be on the table after that. Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we used up the rest of those files. That didn't happen. We start exploring adoption. Then I get a job offer across the border. And Carolyn's Canadian. She'd born in Canada. Her family had all now come back across the border. So it made a lot of sense for us to come
to
Canada. So we came in 2013. So Henry was only a year and a half.
Just in time.
Yeah, just in time.
Yeah. Before it was cool. We moved to Canada.
Before we were all begging to go to Canada.
Yeah.
Hello, can we come?
And when we got here, we immediately started the adoption process. Like the first fall we were here, we were going to weekly training classes at the Children's Aid Society.
It's called TRIDE, by the way. I may have mentioned that to Robin earlier.
Parental Resource and Information something.
Education. Yeah.
It's called PRIDE. That's cool.
It was basically us and a bunch of evangelical Christians. But
So you didn't see many gay folks at these meetings?
Oh. In our class, no.
Huh.
No, we were the only ones.
And you mentioned in our pre-call that adoption's not that easy in Canada. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you go. But one of the differences here is that there's very little private adoption because abortion is widely available and healthcare is widely available. And, you know, all kinds of birth control and contraception are widely available. And there's like meaningful sex education. So there are many fewer unwanted pregnancies. So if you get pregnant in Canada and you don't want to have the baby, you generally don't have the baby. So there's maybe like 10 or 20 private adoptions in the entire province of Ontario every year.
Wow.
So there's not many kids up for adoption from birth as intended by their parents. that combined with the end, like China closing its borders, Korea closing its borders, Russia stopping international adoptions, that really changed options around 2015 when we were making these 2013, 14, 15, making these choices. So we explored, like, is there the possibility of private adoption? Not domestically. If you go to international private adoption, the best bet now is from the US. So you just be adopting somebody out of foster care in the US. Or from one of these like pregnancy crisis centers run by insane fundamentalists who are not going to adopt to lesbians in Canada.
Right, right.
So public adoption is really the only path. And public adoption, by which I mean adoption from foster care, was in the midst of this shift from, you know, you either foster or you adopt, to everybody fosters, and some people are fostering with a view to adoption. Mm-hmm. And that is, what do they call it? They call it like dual planning or something. Like,
I don't remember.
There's the idea is that the kids have the best possible shot at permanency from the beginning, but it means that you begin fostering a baby without any guarantees that you will keep that baby.
Right. And that's across the board. There's no other option.
There's no other option. There's no straight up adoption. If you want an infant, if you are ready to adopt a 12-year-old with significant health or problems or disabilities, then you can go right to adoption.
Right, right.
But if you want an infant, which is what we wanted.
We said, no one's going to screw this kid up but us.
But the hard thing about fostering with a view to adoption is that the whole time you're fostering this kid and bonding with them and trying to make sure they don't have an attachment disorder later and all those things, the Children's Aid Society is working as hard as they can to make sure you don't keep that kid.
Yeah, because they
so they're doing everything they can to put the parents through training, support the parents, make it possible for the biological parents to care for the child. What they really should do is just do away with poverty, right? If we could just get rid of poverty, then we would, this would not be a conversation. But within the bounds of, you know, still capitalism and not a welfare state with no limits.
But I they're just doing heard that. Is and Canada also is for... not perfect. Canada is not perfect.
It's not.
Shh. Don't tell anyone.
And they're also trying to find kin. So they're really big on kinship placement here. And that makes a lot of sense because Canada has a terrible history of removing Indigenous kids from their families and kids of color. Like they're very... There are many fewer people of color in Canada compared to the United States, but they are way overrepresented in foster care and they're way overrepresented in jails and prisons. Similar to the
United similar to the US.
So they've learned some lessons from what they call the 60s scoop here, which was basically removing almost all Indigenous kids from their families of origin and putting them in white homes. And it's like a new form of assimilation.
Yeah.
And even it's still happening. It's happened through the 90s. It's still, I mean, there are Indigenous scholars I respect a great deal here who talk about the Children's Aid Society system is basically residential schools part two. Like it's just the same cultural genocide again. You know, and I'm aware of all that, but I also want a kid and my body's not going to make one and neither is hers. So we go through the training and we get sort of familiarized with this whole system. But what we don't realize that first year is that the Children's Aid Societies are constantly changing their policies and their priorities, and they're privately funded, and kinship placements don't cost them as much money as placements with people like us, because they're paying us as foster parents to care for this baby until adoption happens. So a bunch of stuff that's invisible to us at that point. But anyway, we go through the training. We do the home study, do all the stuff like we had to.
I think the most important, not the most important, but the most interesting was the 11 pages of ranking what kind of child we wanted.
What?
This is the, this was the part that led to some really, really intense conversations between us.
What she means by that is fights.
Yeah.
Everyone heard that.
It was healthy, intense debate on basically on whether or not there is an asshole gene. because the questions range from anywhere between, you know, the color of your baby, which we were like, well, we don't care, to a history of schizophrenia, deaf baby, blind baby, history of all sorts of hereditary neurological Huntington's. I'm like, no, I feel like we don't want a baby with a
The two big ones, though, were, would you be willing to welcome a child into your home that was the product of sexual assault?
Oh,
fuck, and that's hard. Would you be willing to welcome a child into your home who has HIV?
Oh.
And those were the two.
Those are heavy.
Those are really heavy.
Yes. So, yes. But the whole, would you take a child of rape was the whole, led to this whole conversation. We just had nature versus nurture. And there is no, and I was like, just because they haven't found the asshole gene does not mean it does not exist.
And I'm like, I don't think it's relevant at all whether sexual assault made this baby or not. Like,
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm much more on the nurture.
But I'm picturing you two that even your arguments are very smart.
Pragmatic.
And like a debate, it is my time for 3 minutes now. I will speak on the subject of the asshole gene.
Yes. No. It's the gene environment interaction. Yeah. Right?
Thank you. Of course. See, it's smarter how you said it.
Of course.
I was like, that's too many words for me. There were some definite hard no's. Well, basically what we ended up doing was we each took a copy and we sat down and we did it. And then talked about the ones that we differed on.
Yeah. And there weren't many, but those were two of them. Those were two of the big ones.
Well, those are questions. Really, really heavy. And that's not something you would ever discuss otherwise.
No.
I feel like.
Exactly.
Oh my God. I would never think. And I wouldn't even think of that, of the asshole gene in terms of like the rape victim.
No, yeah.
Like, it's like, oh God, that's a horrible thing that I don't want to have to ponder.
Right. Right.
But one of the conclusions I think we came to after going through both choosing a donor and then doing that like adoption form, right? Both of which were sort of like, okay, where are the limits for you? Where are the hard no's? Was that it's all a gamble. Mm. Like as much as we try to choose a partner with whom we want to share genetic material and parenting, and as much as we try to choose a donor or potential baby and birth parents who have certain, even people who are just doing this because they've met and fell in love and got married. It's always a gamble. There are no guarantees. And if you get too far in your head, you start thinking that you can control any of this, but you can't.
This is what we mean by the search for Superman. You get so crazy because the choices are just thrown at us. Every single choice in the world. And all of a sudden you're starting to worry about every little tiny thing. And to be quite honest, my two kids probably have that asshole gene, not going to lie, because they drive me really crazy. I'm just kidding. But like, you know, it's true. You don't know what you're going to get. And your kid comes out as the kid that it's going to be.
And my brother and I have exactly the same genetic material, same parents, and we could not be more different.
Same.
Yeah.
Same as you.
Yep. Well, how long was it before you got a kid, and then how long to adoption?
Well, I'll tell you what, not very much for that first phone call. And that was all due to the fact we have no idea what we're doing. And they knew that. And and two, we said, we don't care what color it is. So it was only a matter of
summer of 2014. So we've been in Canada a year and we get the phone call. There's a baby. Her parents can't care for her. Would you be willing to accept her? And I remember clearly the social worker saying, I think it would be very difficult for these parents to get this baby back, which was crap. It was bullshit.
Oh, no.
She was only with us for 4 months.
No.
And I had taken a year of parental leave because it's Canada and they would pay 90% of my salary if I took a year off to bond with this baby and care for her. And because I teach at a university, that means we didn't schedule courses for me that year. So even when I came back at the beginning of November, she came early July, I'm back at work by the beginning of November and like totally soaked in grief, right? I had no classes to teach because, right? So it was just
actually, it was more like anger on Laurel's part. And she got like on that and she was like, you find us a baby. because then there's a 6 month waiting list, a 6 month grieving period that they forced on us.
Oh, God.
After the loss of when we packed her up, you know, they came to pick her up in the morning and we bundled her up in her car seat with all the clothes that we had, you know.
But I have to tell you the best part of that story, right? Because it's Henry. Henry is awesome. And we knew the whole time. It was so hard because you're constantly like waiting for the axe to fall and this baby to leave your family. And then once we actually found out that was happening, I was actually much more at peace, right? And I was like, okay, I don't have to wait for it anymore. It's happening on this day. But it was still hard and I was in tears. And there's 2-3-year-old Henry. And he sees me just, you know, sobbing on the couch. And he's like,
we kept him home from daycare because we wanted him to be there.
So he didn't
just come home and not,
yeah,
the baby not just gone,
have a sister anymore.
We wanted him to understand. And
he says to me, Mama, we have to be happy for Ani because she's going back to her mom. Aww. That's what he said to me.
Oh my God, I'm gonna
and
cry.
I was like, yeah, you're right. We do. And I am happy for her. I'm happy that her mom has figured out what she needs to do. All she needed to do was go to a maternity home where she would have support.
She was a teenage mother. So
yeah. She was, I think, 14 when she got pregnant. She was young.
Oh, wow.
But, and that fostering experience was also really interesting because, you know, I was sort of primary parent. I was the one who was home and I was taking this tiny black baby, tiny black girl all over London, Ontario. And people were trying to figure out who I was in relation to her and all kinds of things. And it also required a kind of coming out over and over again, because you want to know who you're married. Like, oh, does she favor her father? Like, that's like weird stuff.
And
you're like,
all kinds of questions.
Asking really stupid, invasive, none of your business questions.
Yeah. They're trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so they ask dumb questions.
And so I just got to the point where I was just like, no, I'm a lesbian and this is a foster baby. And could you go over there now, please?
Yeah.
But,
And also we're not friends, so you don't get to ask me that. So there's
but
that.
Also, it's just the awkward moments and the coming out is constant. Even with a white baby, the coming out is constant because they're asking, you know, she must take after dad.
Well, it happened with Henry too. People were like, oh, he has your eyes. I'm like, we're not genetically related. My wife carried him, but thank you. He does have nice
eyes. Except at his first quail baby checkup, the nurse asked if Laurel was the grandmother.
That happens to me. That's happened to me.
Oh my God, that makes me feel so much better.
Yeah, well, my wife, not to me, but to my wife, but it's still same. No, but you know what's funny is my daughter now outs it, like, because my daughter looks a lot like me. I didn't give birth to my daughter. And, you know, people will say, oh, she looks just like you. And Rose will just turn to them and say, that's so funny because she didn't birth me, like, you know, and it's great. She does it for me. I don't have to do it, but then I have to explain it. And then that's awkward. But anyway.
Yeah. So the first foster baby we did not get to keep. And then it was like,
and then you had to wait 6 months,
14 months after that. Well, and in between there was another baby that maybe was going to come, but then that mom fled the province and gave birth in Nova Scotia. So that was then off the table. Like there were several, like, here's a baby. Or did you take this one? Yes. And then it didn't work out. And then,
well, we became much more savvy after the first loss. We're like, okay, we totally got snookered.
Right.
Like, felt very taken advantage of. They knew damn well that this child likely wasn't going to be staying, but they sort of let us, we didn't ask the right, we didn't ask the right questions and we didn't know what we were doing.
And that's not because social workers are bad people. It's because they have an impossible job.
And their system is so that there's no other option. So they have to bamboozle some people into just taking children that they know are going to go back to their homes because there's no other option.
Yes.
Right.
But in retrospect, like with that baby, they brought us all kinds of, they brought us a car seat. They brought us a crib. And the next time they told us to go out and buy a car seat and to go out and buy a crib. Oh. And we were like, is this a change in policy or, and it finally dawned on me like, no, they think this one's actually going to stay. And the birth mother of our second son, Grayson, had already had one child who was adopted out through the foster system. So she'd already lost one, already proven once that she could not parent. Oh. So that made it a better bet for us this time.
Okay.
But but from the day that we brought him home to the day of happy court, it still was over 2 years.
2.25 years.
Wow. It was 2 years. 2 years of just uncertainty and visits that we took him to with his biological parents, you know, wondering though what was going to happen with CAS looking for, and our son has a lot of biological family in in the area, which is great for us now. But at the time when we found out, we're like, oh my God, someone's going to take this baby. Somebody's going to take this baby. Right. Like family is going to come forward because why wouldn't you take this beautiful little boy? And why wouldn't you? We just assumed everybody wanted babies, you know, because we wanted babies. Doesn't everybody want babies? Well, it turns out, no, not everybody does want babies.
No.
Well, it turned out that very quickly our matching worker, the social worker who matched us with this baby, got us in a room with the baby's grandmother, biological grandmother, the biological father's mother. And that really put us at ease because it was clear that she did not want to adopt this baby, but did want to be in his life and was thrilled that there was someone who was not her son who was going to raise this baby. And we had a very nice relationship with her. Unfortunately, she died of cancer a couple of years later. Aww. Yeah. Adoption is a long journey of loss.
Yeah.
And I think people don't often recognize that there's a lot of unanticipated grief and loss, even when adoption works out.
One of my hardest days in the process was the day that they came to tell us that the court has terminated their parental rights, because that meant that another mom lost her baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't because they didn't want the baby. They were sick.
Yeah.
You know, and I just like burst into tears because, you know, it was, well, things were looking great for us, but somebody else found out that they weren't going to get to keep their baby.
Yeah.
And that was really, really hard.
He was about 17 months old. So, you know, we were thoroughly bonded with him. Mm. Oh my God, he was so cute. Fat little cherub. Oh my God. And it's so hard emotionally and logically, because you want them to fail at parenting so that you can keep this baby you've bonded with, but you also empathize with them as parents and feel terrible that they're in this situation because you know how much pain it's causing them.
Yeah.
Robin, the holidays are coming.
I know.
And guess what? KiwiCo is the one-stop gift shop for kids of every interest and age. Kids can discover the mechanics behind everyday objects, Robin. They can learn the science of cooking, explore new cultures, and practice new art and design techniques, all through seriously fun hands-on projects.
Oh, yes. And just Jamie, saying. I think I learned this from you, but you can give a KiwiCo subscription and celebrate a love for hands-on learning all year long. It's a great baby shower gift.
It really is. I really did have a lot of fun with my kids when we got our first box. Orion got this whole build your own campsite set, and he like added this bear face and ears to this cute little felt backpack, and he loved it. And the kids built a fake tent around the campfire, and I kid you not, they camped together for like a full hour straight in their bedroom. It was great.
I love that for you. I have to say, as a parent, it could just be hard to find creative ways to keep your kids busy and challenged. I mean, we all know this, right? I love that KiwiCo does the legwork for you. We love that.
Me too.
So you can spend quality time tackling projects together. I mean, there's something for kids of all ages. I gave the gift to my friend Paige, who had a six-month-old, and it had all of this amazing stuff in it that were exactly right on target for her age. And there's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime.
So, guys, this holiday season, give the gift of a fun, hands-on holiday experience with KiwiCo. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line with code OCT at KiwiCo.com.
That's 50% off your first month at KiwiCo.com. Promo code OCT. I'm wondering, how did you message, you know, this 2 years? Like, how did you message? Did you say this is your brother to Henry? Did you like... How did you message it knowing he could go?
I have another good Henry story. Do you remember this? So Grayson was born in early September. He came home with us on his seventh day of life. We had been going to see him in the NICU for the whole first week. And then, well, actually, I have to tell a nice Carolyn story first, because when we got the call from the matching worker, we were at, was it an email? We were on vacation with her family for her parents' 40th wedding anniversary. We're standing in a pool and she's like, I got an email from Robin. There's a baby. And we have this back and like, okay, what's the deal? What's the likelihood we keep him? And she just looks at me and she says, and this is my wife. This is why I love her. She says, there's a baby and no one is holding him. We have to go hold this baby.
Oh God.
And I just thought, Jesus Christ, you're so much better than I am.
You're right.
We should go hold this baby right now. And we left early and
by stopped gosh, it. Stopped did. At Toys R Us and bought a car seat on the way.
Oh my God.
So the Henry story is a few months later. Henry was very curious about what would happen with his baby. He asked us frequently and, you know, he was four. So the answer was, well, his parents are sick and can't care for him. So we're caring for him till we see if they get better. Mm-hmm. And in November, so Grayson's 3-4 months old, I remember distinctly Henry saying to us, can we marry Grayson so that he can stay in our family?
Oh my God, that's so cute. I'm just crying this whole episode.
God damn it, you two. That's so beautiful.
He's just the sweetest kid. Aww. So yeah, we were like, well, we'd really like to, Henry. And if it comes to that, it's called adoption, not marriage. And that is how we would bring him into our family. But we still have to wait. And then, you know, it would come up every few months from the back of the car where they're next to each other in their car seats. Henry would pipe up with, are Grayson's parents better yet? And then I remember one day he said, you know, he got the same bullshit answer from us again, right? Which he knew was like not the truth, right? Because he's too smart. One day he just says, I don't think they're getting better. I think Grayson is going to stay in our family. And I said, well, buddy, I hope you're right. And he turned out to be
right. He was right.
He was. And in the meantime, over the course of these 2 years, you know, we're taking Grayson to visit with his biological family. We need to get their permission to get his haircut in writing. We need to get notarized letters of permission to travel, right, to cross the border, to take him anywhere.
Because my parents are still in the U.S.
You know, we need to.
And you're talking about two addicts who, like, getting something notarized or signed in writing is not easy.
CAS takes care of that part. They just sort of say yes or no, can we do that? And to be fair, we had a lot of interactions with his birth parents, and they were always pleasant to us. They were a pleasant, polite to a degree, appreciative of our caring for their son. Mm-hmm. We had heard horror stories. We knew firsthand of horror stories where birth parents file charges against foster parents because they can, because they're angry, because they're hurt, because they're scared. Mm-hmm. And so they just say, what's this bruise? You're abusing my child. And then all of a sudden you find yourself with a file open on you. Nothing like that ever happened. No. It took 2 years, over 2 years, and everything went as smoothly as it possibly could.
Like, we have the best possible adoption story, mm-hmm, honestly, and from this system, and it still takes that long. And we still both have some form of PTSD, mm, just from the living with the constant uncertainty and the never being able to fully trust that the system is being honest with you, because we're not the clients. Right. The children and their parents are the clients, and we're the resource families, and we have the least amount of rights. And no one is looking out for no one is looking out for our mental health or our best interest. In fact, they're doing precisely the opposite. They are using us as a resource that they don't have to worry about. And that's really hard. So yeah, at the end of that, we were both kind of a mess, and I was really, really angry. Like, I turned around after the successful adoption, and I was just so angry. I thought, it should not be this hard for good parents to adopt.
Right.
It should not cost us this much. It shouldn't put us in this much uncertainty and emotional kind of purgatory. And it shouldn't potentially cost our kids this much. Like, I understand that this kind of dual track planning for foster kids is the best case scenario for them, but I'm not sure that that this is the right answer for how this system should work. Because, I mean, we needed individual counseling. We needed marriage counseling.
There's a lot of counseling going on after. Before, during, and after this whole process, because we just,
it's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Wow. Oof. I mean, just what an incredible story and journey that you guys had to parenthood. And again, like, we've said it a million times, we'll say it a million more times, just the intentionality with which you're parenting, with which you're choosing, in the home that you're creating. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. And how a million moms or any group could think we're bad people is beyond me.
It's just ridiculous. The amount
I mean, maybe they could think me and Jamie are bad people, but they could never think you two are bad people.
Assholes. I did do that in this episode.
You did. You did.
So. Well, we've definitely had those days too. Definitely. But yeah. No, they're pretty awesome. They could not be more different, the two of them. They're very different guys, but they love each other. They fight constantly, but they love each other. Mm-hmm. And Grayson asked for a sister the other night. Uh-oh. Carolyn comes in and she's like, Grayson just asked me for a sister.
It's not something that hasn't come up before, but it just came up again last night. And Henry would say the same thing. They both really like babies too, that they would love a baby sister. And normally I'm just like, yep, shut it. You're like, meh. But then it happened the other day. And my reaction to it was quite different. I was like, do you? Yeah.
Uh-oh. I review that after Grayson, we considered doing this again. And we got the paperwork from CAS to fill out again. And Carolyn immediately started rage crying.
Emotional collapse.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's...
like, oh, okay.
Probably not the time. Not the time for you.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It was a lot.
It's a lot. And knowing that it's going to be a lot doesn't make it any less.
Right. Because, you know, it's not going to be any shorter than a 2-year journey anyway. And that's a lot of mental turmoil to put on yourself.
Yeah. And I'm too old for that shit.
Aren't we all?
Yeah. You got the goods. Run with it. Well, Carolyn, tell our listeners where they can get your books, All in All, and where they can follow you, All in All, that jazz.
Let's see. I have a website, CarolynElizabethFiction.com. So you can see my books there and also contact information. I am published through Bella Books. So I believe it's just bellabooks.com. You can find everything there. I have a new release coming out in January, which will be swashbuckling lesbian pirate action adventure.
What?
It's called...
Yes! Yes!
It's called The Raven and the Banshee.
Yes,
it's
awesome. It is.
Do you do audiobooks for them?
I don't do them. But they, yes, Tantor Media has picked up my first three. I do have an audiobook releasing November 17th or something.
My favorite part is Laurel's face is so proud and like smiley over your work.
And Laurel, is there somewhere people can get in contact with you? I feel like we didn't share the love
can
with
they
you.
Come How about your classes?
Yeah. I teach a class called American Nightmare in London, Ontario that I suggest everyone tune into. No, you can look me up at the University of Western Ontario, or you can just email me at laurel.c.shire@gmail.com.
Everybody tell Laurel how amazing she is she doesn't look like a grandma.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being with us. This was so wonderful.
Thank you.
It was awesome.
Oh, those two.
Yes, I know. And now I'm on a mission. I'm going to read all her books, all of them. I really think I need to. I need something like to really sink my teeth into.
Oh, I know. Well, and the good news is we already have Carolyn booked for our live stream, which is super exciting. And so we're going to do that thing. We're going to like give out the book information earlier, you guys can get it, read it, and we're gonna have like a book club.
Yeah, so if you're not following us on social yet, you gotta do that so that you can see when the book stuff happens, because we're gonna let you know.
Where can they follow us on social, Jamie?
Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I don't know why I said it like that.
I don't know, it's weird.
If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, and you also, as you know, can support the podcast and join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk. That's where you're going to get that bonus content.
That is correct. And as we were saying, we have this live stream that's every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern. Our next one is this coming Thursday, the 18th. We've got Lara and Joanne. You might remember them from season 3, episode 9, Adventures in Transgender Fertility. And we're going to find out where they are now. Spoiler alert, they have a baby.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I love these two.
Yes. Questions, Yay! Comments, come join us.
And listen to that episode if you haven't.
Yes. And just thank you to our sponsors, Tushy, Modern Fertility, and KiwiCo. We just really appreciate you all, and to all of our Patreons who are already helping us make this show. We can't even express to you how amazing it is that you help us make this content.
We really can't. You guys are great. Thanks for sticking with us.
Whew, we just jammed a lot in there, Jamie.
Okay. Join us on the social, do all the things, and we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Or we'll be in your ears next week. Okay. All right. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out. If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.